This is Barbara Ridenour returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated September 4th, 2015. We will continue with the obituaries. I just have one for today. Jason James Miller, 42, of Decatur, died on Wednesday, September 2nd, 2015. A memorial service to celebrate and honor his life will be held at 12 p.m. on Saturday, September 5th, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, North Chapel. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until service time. Burial will be in Macon County Memorial Park. A reception will follow at the Knights of Columbus. Memorials may be made to the St. Teresa Athletic Department. We'll turn now to the editorial page, or we're at the editorial, yes, to the editorial page, opinions, and read Letters to the Editor. Deliberate decision defended by trustee. As an elected trustee of Decatur Township, I have the opportunity to represent taxpayers on a local government board. I'm proud to say our board hasn't raised taxes. We've worked to eliminate wasteful spending and have cut the administrative budget by tens of thousands of dollars. I do not take the duties lightly. I am of the belief that accountability comes through questions and answers, communication, facts and figures which can be seen on paper. The importance of informed decision-making is essential when spending tax dollars provided by hard-working citizens. Promises and wishes are great, but details or the lack thereof will make or break a program. During the recent changes to general assistance, we were asked to consider eliminating a program that has been used for decades and replace it with one we knew nothing about. So we asked questions. I personally wanted to know the cost, what happens to current clients, and how many new clients would be added to the payroll. I wanted to see success rates from other townships and to understand rules requiring more involvement from clients. Who would manage it? Would it take additional staff? What happens when clients don't comply? The Herald and Review article on August 23rd stated that Supervisor Lisa Stanley accused some trustees of using stalling tactics to prevent the plan's enactment. That's not true. Once the information was shared, the new program passed unanimously. It's better to understand a program rather than rubber stamping a vision before we had details. Change takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. To imply that anyone was working to prevent progress is counterproductive. Thank you to the Herald and Review for acknowledging the transition. Signed, Amy Roof, Decatur. Cities shouldn't rezone land for new Aldi store. As a taxpayer of Decatur, I say there's no need to rezone the west side of U.S. Business 51 between Ash Avenue and Oak Lane to accommodate Aldi's desire to build a new store. This rezoning will degrade an upscale neighborhood that is exceptionally maintained by long-term, tax-paying homeowners. It gives Decatur a positive image as visitors come into town from the north and makes Decatur attractive to future corporations. Construction of a new Aldi would create two eyesores, the store they abandon and the new, slightly bigger store. At a meeting with CC Consulting Group and Aldi on August 27th, officials said the new store would be 3,000 square feet larger than the current store, but there would be less parking than the current site. This makes no sense. There are plenty of empty business locations in Decatur that would accommodate Aldi's desire to move. Besides, there is enough space to enlarge their current store, which has better access than they will have on Ash. This is not just a neighborhood issue. It is a Decatur issue. We need to offer the current empty but zoned commercial spaces to businesses new and existing that want to expand. Just because Aldi's wants to capture Walmart's leftover business, their words, does not justify rezoning this long-term upscale residential neighborhood. Dunkin' Donuts and Decatur Pawn and Jewelry just repurposed two buildings on Pershing Road. Even the Decatur Police Department renovated and moved into an existing building. Aldi could do the same. More than 400 residents have signed a petition against the rezoning of an upscale neighborhood. I encourage the Decatur Plan Commission and Decatur City Council to not approve this rezoning. If we want to preserve our attractive and desirable city, this reckless rezoning must stop. Signed, Edward Dawson, Decatur. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to the removal of trees and underbrush around parts of Lake Decatur. The removal, part of a City of Decatur project, has opened the view of Lake Decatur for travelers on South U.S. Business 51. It also shows off one of Decatur's best assets, a lake in the middle of the city. The $87,500 project was part of a plan approved in 2007 to open public vistas of the lake. Thumbs up to another successful Farm Progress Show, which continues to grow at Progress City USA on the Richland Community College campus. This year's show featured more exhibitors and was estimated to bring in more visitors to what is accurately dubbed the Super Bowl of Agriculture. Even though it was hot for the show, the spring and early summer weather cooperated so the popular field demonstrations could be held as planned. A massive show like this doesn't happen without hundreds of local volunteers greeting visitors and making sure everything runs smoothly. Thumbs up. Actually, a green one to a merger of Decatur is Growing Gardeners and the Good Samaritan Inn. The departure of DIGG Executive Director Olivia Helsner led to the two groups discussing merger possibilities in order to save some expenses and make sure as many dollars as possible are going to help more people. The Good Samaritan Inn is already in the process of merging with the Northeast Community Fund. Both mergers are expected to be completed by the end of the year. It's good to see local groups working together to provide services more effectively and efficiently. Local government officials, are you watching? Excuse me. Thumbs up to firefighters from the Hickory Point Fire Protection District for their annual Fill the Boot fundraiser for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Firefighters collected funds on US 51 near Hickory Point Mall and were hoping to meet their goal of $13,000. The money stays in the area and assists 61 families in Macon County who have someone suffering from muscular dystrophy. The money pays for clinic visits, medical equipment repairs, flu shots, and a week-long camp. The firefighters have collected more than $30,000 over the last 3 years. Thumbs up to President Barack Obama for restoring Mount McKinley to its original name of Denali. Alaskans who sought the name change for years, and it never made much sense to name a mountain after a president from Ohio. The mountain was actually named after McKinley by a prospector in the late 1800s to support McKinley's bid for president. McKinley was the nation's 25th president and was assassinated in 1901 during his second term in office. Kane. Accomplishment is rarely effortless. A handful of current young comedians embarrass themselves and their cohorts when they talk about how much more difficult it is to work in comedy now. The assertion becomes something akin to, all the good jokes are taken. Comedians can't do material about mothers-in-law. Airplane peanuts and grocery stores are barely passable. Jack Nicholson impersonations are off limits. Their use has become so overdone that these subjects, among many others, have passed into the comedic hack area. Times have changed. Audiences demand more, so do their peers. And discard the assumption that those jokes were easy to make. Jerry Seinfeld's missing socks routine may seem trite now, but at its time it was revolutionary, and it's still funny now. There's a distinct danger in making assumptions about history. Freddie Cohen, guitar player for the English indie band The Vaccines, has made just such a blunder with his complaints about the music industry's current insistence on continual touring to milk album sales. Cohen, as with that handful of current young comedians, thinks things used to be a lot easier. He told British music magazine NME, The Beatles would never have been able to have their psychedelic phase or develop so much if they were on the touring treadmill, on which the vaccines find themselves. Cohen bemoans the need to tour continually, arguing it cuts into a musician's creativity. The problem is it's not easy, but the Beatles did manage to evolve despite three particularly intense years as they built and capitalized on their success in America and around the world. People say it's insane how much the Beatles did in 7 years, Cohen continued with NME, but they didn't have to tour Revolver for 3 years to make any money. That's correct. What the Beatles did in the 3 years after Revolver was make Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, Magical Mystery Tour and Hey Jude, Yellow Submarine, The White Album, Abbey Road, and Let It Be. And that's not as impressive as what they did in the 3 years before Revolver. In 1963, the Beatles played in excess of 35 shows a month for 8 of the first 9 months of the year, then slacked off to an average of 25 shows a month for the last 4 months of the year. The next year, they broke in America. They played 100 shows. The year they broke in America, they played 100 shows. In 1965, as they moved into stadiums in America, they played 55 concerts. In that stretch, the Beatles also recorded 6 albums and another 16 songs that were released but not immediately gathered into albums. That number of albums expanded to 10 in the United States as Capitol Records sliced up the 6 albums and jammed in some songs recorded by the Beatles specifically as singles. On top of that, the Beatles made appearances on TV shows, occasionally playing live, but more often pretending to play and sing. One of the most treasured acquisitions from early in my Beatles collecting was a 2-hour videotape of various television appearances from 1964 and 1965. They were performing the same songs, but on different ridiculous sets. How ridiculous? One set was the four of them sitting on sawhorses. On another, Ringo Starr was seen through the cutout windows of a plywood bus, while the other three stood in front as they continued to mimic Day Tripper. Starr pulled out a saw and began slicing apart the plywood. All of these appearances took time, and on top of that, John Lennon and Paul McCartney were writing songs for other performers. And most stunning, they filmed Help and A Hard Day's Night, two of the greatest rock films. Renowned film critic Andrew Saris called A Hard Day's Night the Citizen Kane of jukebox musicals. You wouldn't be alone if you wondered when exactly the Beatles slept between 1963 and 1966. The vaccines, by comparison, have done probably the standard touring schedule for a group at their level. They're one of England's most highly regarded bands of the decade, so far. They played about 150 shows in 2011, as they supported their first album. 4 years later, their third album is out. So they're not really touring in support of an album for 3 years, but part of the hyperbole is ignoring facts. In each of the last 3 years, they played a healthy 55 shows a year, like the Beatles did in their least busy touring year between 63 and 66. The expectation is different today. There's no pressure on a band to put out a new single every 3 or 4 months. And an album or two a year. Bruce Springsteen and U2, to name just two ongoing recording acts, have taken off so much time between albums that the entire careers of some significant 1960s performers, Lovin's Spoonful, Bo Brummel's, Gary Lewis and the Playboys, Petula Clark, Janis Joplin, could fit into the length of their breaks. The key is to do what you can artistically within the situation you've been given. Artists may be ahead of their time or born too late. The most important thing for them, though, is they have no choice but to be of their time. Dear Abby, Mom's motives for marriage are questioned by older man. I'm a 63-year-old man living with a 28-year-old woman. She has 3 children, ages 2, 6, and 7. They live with us every other weekend. I have fallen in love with them. We are planning on getting married soon, and I want to be sure the kids are secure when I'm gone. I have erectile dysfunction problem. She says she doesn't care about sex, but I'm worried she will stray. I was 28 once, and that's all I thought about. I'm afraid she's marrying me for her own benefit, the house, Social Security, and my business. I love her and her children dearly. She says she loves me, but I'm just not sure. Can you help me figure out what to do? Signed, Too Good to Be True. Dear Too Good, if you have any doubts about marrying this woman, then you shouldn't do it. However, if you decide to marry her, first discuss with her this with your legal advisor, and be sure you have an ironclad prenuptial agreement. As to providing for her little ones in the event of your demise, discuss that with a lawyer who specializes in wills and trusts, and who can advise you about the best way to leave money, assets, in trust for them after they have reached a certain age so the money can't be dissipated prematurely. Dear Abby, our parents have been dead for 25 years. Along the way, we have also lost sisters, nieces, and cousins. Every year when we gather for a family reunion, part of it is a candle lighting and spoken remembrance of those loved ones we have lost. Some in my family get teary-eyed or cry. My husband refuses to attend my family reunions because of this. He says my relatives have issues and need to see a mental health professional. He makes fun of us and the way we are together. I have a large family with many offspring. Do you agree we are crazy for the remembrance and the tears? Signed, Loves My Family in Georgia. Dear Loves, no, I do not. During a ceremony such as you have described, tears can be a healthy display of emotion. However, I do not think your husband's comments are insensitive and judgmental, and he's doing the right thing for everyone by staying away. Feeling as he does, far away is where he belongs. Bypassed. Dear Abby, my wife, who is a realtor, is upset because a couple of our best friends listed their home with someone else. My wife feels they should have had the decency to at least notify her that they were going to give the listing to another realtor. My wife had sold them their home a few years ago. Any thoughts, please? Signed, Mift in Miami. Dear Mift, no law says this couple was obligated to have your wife represent them. I suspect that they didn't inform your wife because they wanted to avoid an uncomfortable conversation. If she would like to know the reason they listed their home with someone else, she should ask them. It's possible the other realtor offered services beyond what your wife does. And now for On Biz. Jan's East End Grill, Advance Auto Parts. Tim Bedzetti wants to provide a boost for Jan's East End Grill as he takes over ownership of the longtime Decatur restaurant. Jan Elliott ran the business at 566 North Brush College Road nearly 25 years before retiring last year and selling it to another owner. As Bedzetti takes over, he plans to keep much of the same with a focus on service. I knew it was a good opportunity, he said. I saw the potential for it. The restaurant serves breakfast all day and home-style food for lunch. It offers catering and delivery for larger orders. Hours are 4 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sunday. Call 217-429-0094. That's 429-0094. Advance Auto Parts has opened a shop in a newly constructed building at 317 Lakeland Boulevard, just south of Charleston Avenue in Mattoon. The shop offers a wide variety of auto service items, General Manager Bobby Badgett said. We are able to order parts if need be, Badgett said. We can get our stock replenished 5 days a week. Badgett said the shop also provides testing for batteries, alternators, and starters, code reading for sensor lights on dashboards, installation of windshield wiper blades with purchase, and free battery installation with purchase on most vehicles. What we are striving for is customer service, Badgett said. We want to be the best. Advance Auto Parts acquired CarQuest in 2013. Badgett said the company has moved the employees from the former CarQuest stores in Mattoon and Charleston to the Advance Auto Parts shops in these towns without layoffs. The Mattoon shop is open from 7:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday. Call 217-234-7171. That's 234-7171. Lack of budget doesn't stop state hiring. Springfield. The state may not have a budget, but that isn't stopping Governor Bruce Rauner's administration and other state agencies from continuing to hire more workers. According to records compiled by the Illinois Comptroller, 440 people were put on the state payroll during August. That's higher than the six-month average of hiring of 390 new workers per month, and was an increase over July's hiring mark of 360 employees. And it comes as Rauner is moving to lay off workers in some agencies by closing the Illinois State Museum and reducing funding at the Illinois Department of Agriculture. A Rauner spokeswoman said the new employees are replacing workers who have left the payroll. Any large organization with tens of thousands of employees has continuous turnover, and the state of Illinois is no different, Catherine Kelly noted in an email Thursday. The hiring levels are just one more concern facing the comptroller's office, which is working to pay state bills in compliance with court orders and consent decrees that are keeping the state open for business. We are very concerned about not having a budget, said Rich Carter, a spokesman for Illinois Comptroller Leslie Munger. We're probably running a $5 billion to $6 billion deficit right now based on the current spending path. The new employees range from high-profile hires, like new Illinois Department of Corrections Director John Baldwin, to rank-and-file workers like a librarian for the Illinois Department of Juvenile Justice. The list also includes the hiring of several $31,000 per year interns who will work from August until July for the governor's office. And they include 166 people hired to work minimum wage short-term jobs at the Illinois State Fair last month. But even subtracting the fair workers, the number of people hired in August still tops the 235 who were hired in April, records show. They are not just workers under the control of the governor's office. For example, four of the new workers are in the treasurer's office. Three were hired by the attorney general. The secretary of state's office hired 16 people in August. State Senator Daniel Biss, Democrat of Evanston, who is running for comptroller in 2016, said the hiring numbers indicate that many people may not be taking the lack of a budget seriously. Biss said that there may be legitimate reasons to hire some workers, but the numbers indicate government appears to be operating in a business-as-usual manner. This is a crisis. God help us if this is the new normal, Biss said. State Representative David Harris, Republican of Arlington Heights, said if the objective of the budget impasse is to bring government services to a halt, it is not working. We can't even shut down government, right, Harris said. It's a weird, crazy situation that, without pressure, it won't get resolved. The whole thing seems odd, he said. Botanic Garden corpse flower spike gets assist to open, from the Chicago Tribune. Children petted and caressed it and held their noses in mock disgust. Families took smiling selfies with it. Women knelt over it, pressed their noses to the rubbery flesh, and sniffed its leaves. The so-called corpse flower, the rare rainforest plant that had become a sensation at the Chicago Botanic Garden in Glencoe, Illinois, didn't quite live up to the hype, never blooming on its own and failing to produce most of its powerfully pungent odor. That hardly seemed to matter. Hundreds of curious visitors waited up to 45 minutes on a recent Sunday to see the plant technically named Titan arum and commonly referred to as spike. More than a week after exhibiting signs of impending burst, including a faint odor, the plant never opened to showcase its tan and purple leaves. Instead, Botanic Garden scientists, after waiting more than a week, decided to cut around the base of the flower to open spike on their own. An intrigued Sunday morning crowd looked on inside the plant's greenhouse home. Scientists believe spike, which is 68 inches tall, did not have enough energy to force itself open. The scientists' cuts helped peel the outer layers from the plant's main base, revealing a series of spongy and rubbery leaves, sort of like a bok choy leaf. It's disappointing it didn't open, because it's really quite splendid, said Chicago Botanic Garden conservation scientist Patrick Herendeen, who narrated the opening to the crowd. They're amazing plants. Their flowers are amazing, and their odor is amazing. However, this is not unprecedented. It just didn't perform as expected. But that's just like our garden plants at home. The plant is not sick, and the fact that it did not open on its own does not mean it will not again, scientists said. This is not an obituary or a death, Herendeen said. Spike will bloom again. More than 50,000 people had seen Spike since the beginning of August, the garden said, and at least 360,000 people have visited Spike's page on the garden's website. The Titan arum, Amorphophallus titanum, is a rare plant native to the rainforests of Sumatra, Indonesia. There may be only one plant per 100 acres in the wild. They rarely open, but when they do, the plant produces a strong, pungent odor to attract pollinators. The Titan arum begins to emit a foul odor in the afternoon before it bursts open, usually in the middle of the night. The smell accompanies the opening, usually lasting for about 24 hours. Spike produced a faint smell for about 4 days, more than a week before the Sunday presentation. The odor then faded, causing scientists to believe that the plant had bypassed the blooming stage. Staff will attempt to determine why Spike did not open on its own. Patty Vitt, an associate conservationist at the garden, said Spike may have had developmental problems with its corm, or underground stem system. In the wild, the rare plants produce a strong odor to alert beetles and other bugs that it's time for pollination. Spike has lived mostly out of sight at the Botanic Garden for 12 years, but was showcased in the semi-tropical greenhouse once it exhibited early signs of blooming. The garden capitalized on the odd plant, placing "See Spike" signs throughout the grounds and handing out buttons to visitors. The garden has seven other Titan arum plants at various stages of development. There is no timetable for Spike's blooming process, Herendeen said. It could happen several months from now, or in years. After Herendeen hosted the forced opening, visitors snaked past the plant throughout the morning, taking photos of the large spadix, the stem base, and touching the spathe, the outer parts of the plant removed by scientists and placed on tables outside the greenhouse. I do not normally get to see flowers like this, said Liana Moll, 7, who came into the garden for the first time with her parents, making the trip from south suburban Burbank. Her dad, Powell, said that he heard about the plant on the news and thought it would be a fun, quirky learning experience for Liana. He was a bit disappointed that Spike didn't bloom, but the family still had a good time. It looked pretty cool, Powell Moll said. That's all we have time for today's edition of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated September 4th, 2015. This is Barbara Ridenour. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a great week and weekend and week to follow. Stay cool.